Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey everyone, it's your host Millie Tamaris, aka Millie T, aka Lactose Intolerant, aka formerly known as Swaghetti and Meatballs, here in the studio with the co-host, co-producer, editor extraordinaire, Candy Harrell. Candy, what's good?
Oh, hello.
Yes, I'm trying to open up my Foghorn app.
I got you. No.
I'm like, and
I don't see the difference.
Oh. All right. We have a great episode for you today at the All Dick is Trash podcast, the podcast about sex, relationship, the patriarchy, and all things in between. Our guest, I'm super, super hyped to have her. She's been on Mad Things. We have Rhonda Handsome here, aka Rhonda Passion Handsome. And she was amazing. It was an amazing interview. Everyone should know who she is. She's open for Anita Baker, for Aretha Franklin, for James Brown. This woman is it. I'm so excited. But before we get that, y'all know how this goes. I tell a trash dick anthology, then we're going to talk about a trash dick confession, and then we got our interview. So for the trash dick anthology, I'm going to tell you about this guy that I've been seeing. You know, so I met him on Tinder and he was kind of cute, but he had like blurry photos. And as soon as we started texting, he was just texting me all the fucking time. You know, those guys that text like good morning every fucking day.
Winky face.
And like, how are you, beautiful? And if I didn't text him back, he fucking would flip out and be like, never mind them. If I didn't text him back like in like a few hours, because sometimes, you know, I want to text. I like texting, but like, not all day, every day, bitch. I got shit to do.
You got to take it. Literally, you got to wake up, take a shit.
Yeah.
Have a shower. Shit.
Like on my way to the work or whatever, then I'll text you. But dog. So yeah. This guy was very like crazy. And we hadn't even met yet. And he was like, OD. And I was
when
like,
when was this?
This was, we were talking last October. So like, basically I just ended things with, that DJ guy, which that's a whole other episode. Was the other guy. So I just ended things and I'm on Tinder and I'm talking to this guy and he's just OD and I'm like, damn. And then, but we meet, like finally we meet, and he was way cuter in person. He was really nice and like like a little reserved and shy. And I thought he was so, like, I thought he was, like, really adorable. He had, like, a good sense, you know? I felt, like, some kind of, like, something innocent about him, you know? Like, an innocence, like a purity that I didn't really see. And, you know, he's a plumber, so he's not, like, this, like, clout chasing, like, comedy. He didn't even know what
BuzzFeed is.
An everyday man. Ugh. Everyday trash man. yeah, so we had this great date, and then we go home, we go to my place, we sleep together. And yeah, it was like, as soon as I started getting into him and like, oh, you know what? I really like this guy. He just started like, text starts coming frequently. Like, instead of, like, where if I didn't text him back in 10 minutes, he would flip out. Now he's taking, like, 5 hours to text me back. Then it's, like, 2 days. Then, like, he's like, okay.
It's cuffing season.
Yo, and, like, he's like, oh, when are we going to hang out with again? And then I gave him a specific day. And then he just fucking, it was, like, the day before that day. We were supposed to hang out on a Saturday. And the Friday comes around. And he completely ghosted me, like, didn't write back. And I was like, what the fuck? And I was so hurt, so annoyed. And, you know, that's it. Like, then, like, a month after that, I do this show. I do Roast of Your 15-Year-Old Self. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Elise Morales. And I'm doing this show. And I go backstage, like, a month after. No, sorry. 2 weeks after he ghosted me and, like, whatever. Then he texts me and he was like, hey, what's up? Sorry I've been away. And I'm like, I'm like, no. You fucking haven't texted me in 2 weeks. I need something more than sorry I've been away. Like, and then I didn't. Then he didn't never wrote me back. And I'm like, fine, fuck this guy. Then I'm at a show, backstage, get a text, and it's him, and he's like, I'm sorry. And when you know how many times I've gotten like a text randomly that's just like, I'm sorry. Mm-mm. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like a month after the 2 weeks.
He just like, kept texting you, I'm sorry.
No, he texted me, I'm sorry. And then I'm like, what are you sorry about? And then he's like, I don't know that we haven't hung out, LOL. And I'm like, you
not LOL.
Ghosted me twice. Oof. Fuck you. And then he was like, come on. Blah, blah, and I'm like, no, dude, I don't want to talk to you. Like, you don't know what you want. Blah, 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 this and that. And he was just like, come on, I just want to see you. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry. I just want to take you out. I just want to take you out to eat. Can I take you to a nice dinner? Blah, blah. And he was just so persistent for like fucking like 5 or 6 days. He would not let up of texting me like, yo. And I'm like, where was this energy?
Last month.
Even if he texted me, like, even if he did ghost or whatever, but it was like, you know what? My bad. I was going through something, or I wasn't sure, or this and that, or I'm like this. Like, if he just let me know, you know, but it was just like that lack of.
He ghosted you during the holidays in like November?
He ghosted me before. This all happened like, so, like, we went out like in early October, and then he ghosted me like around Halloween. And then hit me up like around things, you know, hit me up like again, and then hit me up around Thanksgiving, like shit like that. And I'm like, ugh. And then, yeah, he just like, I was just like, look, I hope the next girl you're with, like, you treat better than you treated me.
Or the girl you're with, secret family.
I know. Well, when we had sex, afterwards we were talking, and he's like, yeah, you know, I was in a relationship for a year. And we broke up. And I'm like, why'd you break up? And he was like, we just broke up. And I'm like, okay.
That sounds like you have closure.
Yeah. So there's more to that story, but we're going to keep going with this amazing episode.
Here's a couple of confessions we've gotten from people. All right. A guy who worked a few doors down from me would go out of his way to make small talk and was super flirty with me for a few months. So I finally agreed to go out with him in a group setting. Around 6 of us went for drinks, and at the end of the night, he walked me to the train, and we kissed. He then immediately invited me over his place and sternly stated that I had to be gone by 8 a.m. Mind you, it was midnight, because that's the time his wife got home. I proceeded to freak out and yell at him for putting me in this position and not telling me he was married. He then told me I should have noticed his ring. Needless to say, I never saw him again, walked an extra block to work to avoid him, and try to notice things like wives before I make out with people. All dick is trash.
Yeah, I'm like, that guy is trash, but how do you not notice a ring? that's like the first thing I check for. We don't know who sent this in. I'm not going to judge the person who sent this in.
All right, fuck it. You know, it's me. Hey. I'm trying to, because I can't stop nervous laughing. It's fucking hard. One time in Bushwick, they put up 3 new houses, and I didn't notice any of them until like a year in.
I'm calling the police.
It was hard. He flirted with me for so long. I was really trying to play this one off.
Ring on.
But I never noticed his hands.
Girl.
I am trash. But I'm not like a garbage fire dumpster. That shit was rough. His coworkers didn't tell me.
Yeah, no, that's fucked up.
No one told me that he was married. We flirted for a few months. Super awkward.
This is where the fans learn that every trash to confession is just candy. The fucking veil's up on that one.
This shit.
The jig is up.
I can't even get through one without a no. Yeah, I'm not a good liar. That's
so funny.
I can't.
Yeah, well, the guy's obviously trash, but.
Good save. Yeah, but.
You know, I do notice
rings now. I do notice rings, but sometimes you get like a papi chulo that just has like a little pinky ring, and you know, it's a whole other story.
A lot of guys don't wear rings, and I hate that. A lot of men don't wear wedding rings. I hate it.
Can I just say? Get a tattoo or something.
I hate it.
Fair.
I'm so excited for our guest. Everyone, give it up for Rhonda Handsome, aka Passion.
Yeah.
And you know, how are you doing today?
I'm fabulous. I had no problem getting here, and I'm just excited for the new year.
Yes.
I really am. I'm excited. Someone has asked me to direct a short film for them, and I'm just all a Twitter. You know, I direct, but that has been mostly on theater.
Yes.
And I've been looking forward to on-camera work, and so I'm psyched for
that's
that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Look, and excellent. Just to toot your own horn, I'm going to go through your background a little bit.
Oh, my God.
You are a native New Yorker, but specifically native Brooklyner.
Bed-Stuy. Do or die, mostly die.
Yes. Your producer, actress, singer, and award-winning comedian and director. You've opened for Aretha Franklin, Anita Baker, James Brown, and Diana Ross in venues like New York City's Radio City Music Hall and LA Greek Theater.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, I want to hear about it. And your latest solo show is Lie Baby Lie.
Oh, yeah.
True Tales of Sex, Murder, and Gentrification.
I did that at Dixon Place. It was just so fun. So fun.
Yeah. That's so amazing. And, of course, everyone aspires to be, you know, Amy Schumer, Chris Rock. But just to see somebody like... It's hard in this like age as a young comedian. I'm like 30, and there's just, you know, so many people that are popping off are like 24, and they've gotten their first writing show at 22, and there's just all this thing. It's like, if you haven't really like gotten your first Netflix special by 30, like your life is over and you just got to give up.
You're dead meat.
And you're dead meat. But it's so refreshing, and it's so cool to see like, again, someone like you who's been doing it for a long time, and you're happy and you're still working and you're still creating and you're still doing stuff and like just living a really, you know, and this is just from what it looks like to me of like, you're still performing, you're still doing things. And like, it's not this, you know, do or die thing of like, if you don't have 50,000 million Twitter followers.
I'll take them at Rhonda Handsome. That's like a handsome man without the D. I will take all of your Twitter followers. Come on now. Come on.
I will follow. I don't know if we even follow each other on Twitter. But yeah, like, it's just so cool to see that.
Well, I thank you for that. I hear that and I accept it in the spirit that it is given. But I'm excited when I'm around you, like, because I'm doing your podcast. I've done your festival.
Oh.
I even came out to some pizza place somewhere where you were doing comedy, doing a show out there.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing excites me because I want to be connected to what's happening now.
Yes.
So it's a mutual admiration society. And I'm good with that.
No, exactly. No, I'm happy to be that connection with you to like what's happening now, quote unquote, because a lot of comedians, especially like younger comedians on the Brooklyn scene and the alt comedy scene, they say that they're very inclusive. And to a certain extent, they are. You know, there's a lot of really exciting things happening with queer comedy and like trans people and stuff. But like, it's also really important to be inclusive of people with different ages and life experiences.
Absolutely.
And stuff. But I will also say that not everybody, to speak to your merit, like not a lot of older comedians like, you know, being in young spaces, like Dave Chappelle, Jerry Seinfeld, they can't go into a Brooklyn comedy club right now or like a Brooklyn scene now and have like relevant cutting cutting edge like thing that doesn't ostracize people and like be fitting in the scene.
I don't want to mock millennials. I don't. Exactly. You should not make fun of the poor. And I don't mock millennials. I need someone to show me how to do the Instagram thing. So no, I'm very respectful. Very respectful.
I'm calling that for me. You call this one. But you know what I mean? Like, people want to be inclusive, but it's like, if you're going to come and mock on millennials or talk about how it's stupid that there's multiple gender, you know what I mean? Like, then it's like, yeah, that you don't, this is not your space. So it's not only that, like, you know, it's a receiving again on both ends. Of
well,
like,
it's funny you mentioned multiple gender. I feel like I need a tutorial. I do. I'm not disrespecting anybody.
Yeah, or dismissing. But I don't dismiss anyone.
But I need a tutorial on, you know, how to address people for their individuality, their pronouns,
yes,
their sexual orientation, their gender, whatever it is, because it's a different time.
Yes, but you know what? And I mean, this is what I'm saying. Like, the attitude of I need to know a tutorial versus it's stupid because I don't understand it is like the shift in the thing that, like,
no, that's calculus. It's stupid because I don't understand it. Yeah, but not for human beings.
Yeah,
not for human
exactly
beings.
And I mean, that's the thing that will always make you relevant, I feel like.
Whoa,
right?
Thank yes. you. Thank you.
Well, okay, so something that I like to ask everyone, do you think all dick is trash, yes or no?
No, I think I have had one or one and a half that was not trash.
Oh my gosh. Well, yes, I will. No, I have to say this clarifier, right? I like to make the comparison that, like, when black people criticize the police, you know, like police brutality, it's like not every single cop is a bad person and not every single police officer operates in the sense of violence. But if we don't, like, call out the whole system, then nothing's going to change and nothing's going to progress.
I hear you. And, so, I actually agree with you that the socialization of gender males is like has been misogynistic. It has been self-centered. Mm-hmm. It has frequently had a basis in arrogance. And so hopefully with what you just said, I don't have to say it's not all men, but the socialization process in general has led us to most dick being trash.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I guess, and in trying to find your background, I want you to connect to, like, how did you arrive to where you are right now in your understanding
of dick being trash? Well, let's start with my father abandoning me in utero.
Oh.
That has been a hard thing for me to accept and an unfortunate thing to color my looking at men in general.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. I feel like that relationship between a child and her father, mm-hmm, is one of the most important imprints.
Yeah.
And I have spent my entire life, you know, trying to fill that void. Not to say that, you know, my mother did not do everything that she could.
Of course,
rest her soul. But that was my first introduction to to dick being.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different definition to the pullout
game. Absolutely.
It pulled out and completely.
And then and now around the socialization process, I grew up Catholic, actually going to you know, Catholic churches in Brooklyn, and the dogma, the catechism was such that saying that your own sexuality is bad and the only way to keep yourself from going to hell and suffering from, you know, carnal knowledge was to stay away from dicks. Mm. So that was my other understanding that, you know, dick is trash.
Yeah.
It's gonna leave you jacked up and, you know.
Well, you know, it's kind of crazy because at first it's like, well, that's a terrible message to settle women. And then it comes back full circle and you're like, were they onto something?
Really? Really? Absolutely. But I feel sad. I do feel sad, you know, for the men who are trying to do the right thing, because the majority are trying to give the impression that they're just trying to get over, just trying to do enough to get over.
Yeah.
And they end up perpetuating the, you know, the trash identity.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, Fumi was here earlier was saying was like, you know, especially like he was speaking as an Asian man, you know, and maybe I would, you know, Asian men maybe are like the specific case where like in media they're emasculated and they're, or like they were for a long time of like, you're not even really a man.
I don't agree with that. In fact, I have a thing for tall Asian guys.
Oh, me too. No, listen, I sleep with a lot of Asian guys and I told them
I'm jealous.
Yeah. I didn't say it was good, but I'm saying like, I told Fumi, I was like, it was my secret for a long time. I felt like the Asian men were hot and no one else knew. And now it's kind of like getting like popularized in media. Yeah. I'm like, damn it, man. No one's supposed to know that these guys are hot.
There was a site I was following on Tumblr that was with Asian guys, you know, with nothing but like a flimsy little curtain in front of their genitals.
Uh-uh, Rhonda, I know you ain't not on Tumblr. Fine, look at that Asian man in loincloths, Rhonda.
Yeah, but they took it off. Tumblr, like,
took it off.
Changed their community standards. Yeah. They're like, damn. Thanks a lot.
Got it. The police. Anyway, but I feel like in a certain way too, maybe men of color are emasculated in different ways, maybe because of like, you know, financial, or in different ways. And it's just like, they're told their whole life they have to like prove that they're being, and now it's like things have shifted and it's like, well, men are the problem, you know? And I'm sure it's hard for men, but we don't feel bad for that.
That's a double-edged sword, what you were just presenting, because I have heard in the YouTube streets that, you know, there's controversy around black men wearing dresses and black men, same-sex loving black men versus a traditional representation of black men as the head of a nuclear family, you know, the wage earner and cooperating partner. And I really have to, you know, examine, you know, is there some overall Illuminati, you know, dictum that, you know, to be a success in comedy, the man has to wear a dress?
I know what you're saying. Like, so basically you're talking about like men. So there's like kind of three things, right? There's like men who go on like Instagram or something and wear a wig and be like, women be like, and like mocking women. And that gets like, that gets viral and that goes places. And then you have Tyler Perry with the dress and you have Martin Lawrence in Big Mama's House. There's not enough images of black men in a nuclear family as a stable member of the household and all this stuff.
Yes.
And then you have like, are they promoting like a lack of masculinity? And is that's what's making black men gay? And I feel like the same sex thing is like a little separate, but in terms of those things. And I feel like, I kind of not that I understand, because that's kind of like a hotep. Hoteps are almost there in terms of like they're almost right, and then they say one thing. Because as a woman, I feel like, yeah, it's not fucking fair. Like
when she mentions hotep, oh my, I start smelling sandalwood for some reason.
But like, yeah, when you know, it's like, can you make comedy that's not mocking women? Can you do something that's not like, it's like so much of it is relied on women being the joke and stuff. And it's like a woman comedian is not going to get as much traction as a man in a dress. Like, I get that. And then there's the other like thing of like, oh, well, we shouldn't have men in dresses at all because that's damaging to the thing. And to that argument, so to the first argument, I totally understand. And it's something that annoys me too, of like, you know, that a woman can't make these like, satirizations of men, or like it's not as widely celebrated as a man in a dress.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, men in dresses like go viral and stuff. And it's,
and they can comment on us.
And they can comment on us and make commentary. But I, you know, men can make commentary on women and do all this stuff on women, like millions and millions and millions of videos. But I'm nervous about coming out with a podcast that says all dick is trash because I'm going to get attacked. You know what I mean? And that's like, that's the society we
live in. That's why I don't do a podcast. I'm a chicken. Okay.
But exactly. But like you're even scared. Of, and the men don't have to be scared about making fun of women and saying women are vapid and shallow and stuff.
You, like, you just reminded me of something that happened to me so, so long ago. I was in, I think it was either Tahoe or Vegas, someplace in opening for Joe Piscopo. This is when he was a name. So, and he, I have traveled in from New York 5 hours or however long it is. And I'm just getting ready to take a nap before the show. And he calls me and he says, hi, this is Joe. Yeah, hi, I'm looking forward, blah, blah, blah. He goes, so I just want to check. You're not going to do any of that like female stuff, are you?
What the fuck is he talking about?
Well, yeah. That's what.
My period. Oh, like what?
Yes, I just talk with my labia. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, yeah. Yeah, so yeah.
What? Oh, gosh, but like, you, no one's asking him if no one's ever gonna ask a guy. You're gonna talk about male things.
Are you gonna talk about how, that male
like,
stuff?
Yeah, yeah, it's like so rude. So then, yeah, it's like this double edged, like, or not even. It's like this double standard and all this stuff. And then on the other hand, like, you know, it's just about having visibility of like different kinds of people in the media and. Like, I hate to always go back to the media, but it really does make a huge impact on what you think. Because, like, again, I grew up with Dominican men and, like, Latin men and black men. And I just saw how, not to say that my dad isn't great or, like, all this stuff, but, like, overall, I was, like, not happy with how I was seeing the men in my life treat women.
I had the same experience. And sometimes I have to wrestle with how much of my displeasure with the example that I've seen around me comes, a large percentage of it comes from the systemic racism of the society causing men to act out like that. And then how much is it just because all dicks are trash?
Yeah. Well, that's true, too. I mean,
oh, God, trying to figure that stuff out. It's like calculus.
Exactly. But it's, but you know, and I read an essay on Fatherly that was basically like, there's no such thing as toxic masculinity, but it's the idea that masculinity is earned. Like, being a man is earned, where being a woman is something, you know, like, if you're talking about cisgendered people, but it's like being a woman is something that happens like when you get your period. Then you go from girl to woman. That's like your thing of womanhood. Being a man is a series of actions that you have to do to earn. Like, you're not a man until you hunt. You're not a man until you provide for your households. And like, men who feel like they're in danger of like not being a man act out more and do all these things to like be solid in their manhood. And it's just like, how can we redefine it in a way that like has good things that are meant to be.
I think you're saying something pretty profound.
Yeah.
Because
I'm
agreeing. I like that.
I'm not just a hot bod. You know what I mean? I also, it's beauty and brain. I tell people all the time.
Absolutely. Because, and I think our digital world, our electronic world, we are suffering from not having rites of passage that help us establish ourselves like that in society.
Yeah.
I actually think that that is an issue. That's a blank spot in our development now, that we don't have these signposts where we understand where we are.
Yeah.
In the society, what's expected of us.
And I think that just comes from, like, you know, now we're talking about, like, stigmatization of, like, mental health and all this stuff. Because it does take a lot of reflection, a self-reflection and thinking, like, well, what do I want?
What do I
value?
Yes.
What do I think? Like, and then, yeah, like, I watch a lot of Divorce Court with Judge Lynn Toler. I'm obsessed.
I love that. I love it.
You love the show, or you love that I am obsessed with Divorce Court?
No, I love the show too. Yeah. I love it.
So there was a guy who he was a, you know, piece of shit, cheating on his wife all the time and all this stuff. And then, you know, when the judge is like, why do you do this? Like, why do you do this to your wife? And then he's like, you know, I just can't be tied down ever. Like, I'm just never going to be monogamous, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, well, have you talked to her about it? Have you told her that? And he's like, why would I tell her that? Like, and then she's like, I'm sorry, it's the truth. I didn't know that. I thought you didn't
that's
know
why, that's
and
one of like, the things no, that I love watching me. The show for.
Exactly, because she's like, I don't know. I thought you would tell the truth to someone that you're married to, but I guess I'm fucking antiquated. But that's what I love. But then he's like, then he was saying, like, no, it gets me off that, like, she doesn't know. In the same, if she knows, then, you know.
Then she might want to do her own thing,
exactly.
too.
Exactly. That's the thing. And I have so many men in my life, or, like, cousins and shit, who, like, I know they'll never commit to a, they like whatever, like being out there and all that stuff. But the thing is, like, women are told that we are nasty if we don't just want a monogamous thing, right? But then, so then that's what we're told. And then that's what we value.
Yeah, I hate that.
That's what we value and that's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's like the manipulation of these guys who know that they're never going to settle down. Know that they never want to blah, blah, blah.
And they don't bother to tell you.
They don't
that.
Bother to tell you. And then they don't want the women. They don't want the women that are like, yeah, yeah, you can go and have sex with other people, but I'm going to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want that. They rather just get a woman and like drive her fucking crazy at home, calling and texting and all this shit.
They want the loyal ride or die. Like every rapper like always does an Instagram post about like, oh yeah, this is my ride or die through prison, through affairs, through no money.
Why?
And money now. And it's like, that's not, you're just putting all your dirt out there.
But I think for either a man or a woman, you have to earn that ride or
exactly.
die.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it comes automatically.
Yeah. And that's that's what Fumi was saying, was like, he's at a point in his relationship where they like have opened it up, but it took many years of work and like solidifying something solid where there's trust and respect. And then they can like explore this other thing. But if you start off with that, like, it's just not going to go anywhere.
Mm.
A lot of it's societal pressure, too, though. Yeah. I mean, it's terrible. But I just know, at least, like, speaking for, like, Latinos, like, the women are always taught just to put up with anything. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of the same in the Black community or, like...
Well,
yeah, Caribbean,
I feel like frequently putting up with trash dick it can be part of your survival mechanism. Especially with the difficulty with getting a job, holding a job, and having a decent paying job.
Yes.
Or you know, how are you going to live? Well, you've thrown your lot in with this other person, and you're putting up with trash.
So that's why people are like, oh, back in the days, and I would love to hear your perspective. But people are like, oh, back in the days, like, people didn't get divorced. They, like, worked through their problems. And, like, to a certain extent, like, I can say that, you know, I understand, you know, relationships take work. And there are rough periods. And there are things that you can work through. But there's also, like, I see that as, like, a freedom of, like, no, now it's not a financial thing. Like, I'm not going to be homeless if we're not together. I'm still going to be okay. So you really have to earn and prove why... constantly why I should be with you. And if you're not going to pull up your end of the deal, then I'm out. But I'd love to hear like a little bit, just as someone who's been in New York, has been on the scene for a while, and like I know like dating is so probably different, or maybe it's not different now than it was maybe like 20-30 years ago. I would love to hear your perspective on that, on how dating has transformed.
I really don't want to be dating right now. I really don't want, I'll have a buddy. I'm very happy to have a buddy. But I hear so many complaints around online dating. Mm-hmm. I'm from the previous century where people met in person and they actually talked to each other. Mm-hmm. And I see consistently similar complaints from women about men who are like playing us playing a game. It's almost like they're playing a video game with you. You know, it has different components. So, you know, a lot of it is texting until you're ghosted or they immediately want to think that they're going to have sex and you don't even know if you really want to.
Or
you know,
they will ask you for sex, like, without asking you
what's your last name,
like anything. You're like, come on. Like, but yeah.
So that idea of it being another step removed from personal actually is kind of scary to me.
Mm.
And makes me sympathize with anyone for whom that is their normal way of looking for companionship, friendship, or even, sexual.
Yeah.
Some action.
Yeah.
I have an unusual situation in that I didn't even start dating until after I was married. It was did I say that?
I am calling the police.
So I actually met my first boyfriend. When I met my first boyfriend, I didn't realize that that was going to become my husband.
Mm.
As I mentioned, I grew up in a very strict situation of Catholicism. Mm. And because, as I had mentioned before, my father abandoned me, I didn't think any male would love me. And this was the first person who approached me.
Mm.
And we liked each other and fell in love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was my whole experience up until I got divorced.
Mm.
So like now, the time in between there has been my experiencing of men, most dicks is straight.
Yeah.
You know, after that, because I was married 4 decades to my first.
Do you mind me asking about the divorce?
Well, you can ask anything you want. I don't know what I'm going to answer.
Well, just so you were married for 40 years?
Well, oh, no. Only 30, actually.
Oh, 30 only, years. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But still, like, so how was that? Like, how was it ending? And, like, what was that transition?
Well, you were saying some things about, you know, knowing, well, at least I feel like, when you go into a committed relationship, you've got to know what you want.
Yeah.
And both people have to really understand, you know, what this means. And for, I think, the first 10 or 15 years, it was working fine. And then once I realized that this was not the same person that I had met when I was 15, or that this was not the same thing that I was looking for when I was 15 years old, things began to change.
So you met when you were 15?
Yeah.
Wow. So I can't, you're a completely... What you want, everything is completely different. Yeah, exactly. Of course. Of course, when you get older.
I had different ideas about what would be good for me as far as an adult.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure in that
different.
Time you're like figuring out comedy too, and you're doing comedy.
Well, that was another thing. And I'm so glad you brought that up. And I do feel sorry for my ex around that, because the comedy was a very large part of my life, and he resented it. I mean, he was a good man. By no means do I mean to,
He's not going to listen to this. Girl, he ain't listening to this.
No, but seriously, I do feel that, you know, he's a great father and all of this other stuff. He resented the time. I mean, I was going out 4 or 5 nights or more a week to do sets. And, you know, sometimes 2-3 sets a night. And this is when the original Catch a Rising Star, the original improv were all out there. And my attention was really split. And, sometimes I was going back and forth to L.A. just picking up my my bag at the door and go either going to LA or touring. I did 2.5 years touring with Anita Baker. So, yeah. You know, that was always happening. So,
and then the kid, your son at home?
My son is at home. Sometimes I was doing homework with him on the phone from California.
Yeah.
But my husband at the time was, you know, was there holding things down, and he really began to resent that, the time and energy and focus that I was putting into comedy.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I feel like I totally feel that. And again, we were talking earlier about that documentary that you were in.
Oh, IB Dumbin was
IB about Black women in comedy.
Yes, along with Marsha Warfield.
Yeah, and like a lot of other people. And it was so cool to see like how different comedy was, like, and the ways that was different was like you would do busking in Washington Square Park. You would just tell jokes and have a hat, and people would just come up and like see different sets, and there'd be people in different corners. Like, yeah. That shit is so cool to me, and that's also terrifying to me. But also too, in the same ways that like it's still very similar. Like it's similar, like how. Like that battle of like being a Black woman in comedy, and also.
But now you're busking on the internet.
Now we're busking on the internet. No, literally, we're busking on the internet, and anybody where like maybe in Washington Square Park, you're saying jokes, and people are like, "Oh, this doesn't resonate with me. I'm gonna walk away." And in Twitter, it's like, "This doesn't resonate with me. You fucking suck. You're a piece of shit." Blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
So there's that. But I'll also say too. Those same things that you're talking about, I mean, I'm sure people are still dealing with now. And like, you know, just me as somebody who's like trying to find a partner in life, like while dealing with, you know, like having, you know, dealing with my love of comedy and like doing things 5 nights a week and having my time and my focus and stuff and having people resent it already. And it's like, you can't resent this already. You just got on this ride, honey. Like, what the, you know? So like, I totally see, like, I could totally understand. And yeah, how like, that's something that, and I feel like that's something that a lot of comedians go through. Of like they find comedy later in life.
Yeah.
And then, or not later in life.
Having someone who can understand the pressures of this industry and the self-centeredness that is built into being in something like stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Calls, you know, for the person to be, you know, borderline sane or either borderline crazy to say, yeah, I want to support you in, you know, in doing something that's going to have you in bars and nightclubs, you know, almost every single night.
Yeah.
And you know, and not sitting with me and, you know, holding my hand or, you know, watching Netflix or something.
Yeah, and that's tough. I mean, I feel like that's tough in general, but it's especially tough, like, for men. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, for men to accept that.
Yeah.
And I feel like as somebody who's dating now online, like I said, because I'm not trying, you know, my networks, what are my networks? Like, my Buddhist organization, that's not, like, really that big. Like, and you can't really, like, explore data. I wouldn't want to anyway,
mm-hmm.
but,
mm-hmm.
like, it's not somewhere where, like, I can, you know... That's not somewhere, you know, you can't really shit where you eat in Buddhism.
Where you pray.
Yeah, shit where you pray, exactly. But shit where you eat. And then comedy, it's like, you know, it's like not great. Like, comedians suck.
I have, you know, I hate that a lot of the actions of comedians make me generalize that many of them are immature, and I think that the industry frequently enables men to remain immature for a much longer time, whereas when women come into it, we've got to get our big girl panties on and be very mature and be looking out, you know, and not trying, you know, not trying to be stupid. I remember I'm on some comedy gig, and these guys, as a quote prank, locked me in my hotel room. The first time I'm working this particular club, I forget exactly where it was. Yes. And they were playing these pranks they play pranks on each other. Like, oh yeah, let's put shaving cream under the handle of the car. But they actually, I don't know how they did it, but they locked me in my room, and I'm going, this is really kind of childish.
Like, come on a gig. It's different if you've been like with them for 3 years and you have established that relationship.
Well, at least, but I'm there sweating going, I'm supposed to be walking into the comedy club at this point.
That's terrible. Yeah, and they kind of like ruined, like, I mean, I'm sure it was fine, but like, they're fucking up one of your opportunities. Yes. And that's the shit, like, fucking with your money. And that's the shit that it's like, so I'm not really attracted to other comedians. But like, I will say too, which I feel like, as a woman,
I didn't say I wasn't attracted to
I'm attracted. No. Yeah, we get it, Rhonda. We get it. Two things that happen, and I feel like this happens with, like, normal civilians, non-comedians, is that, like, they automatically think, like, I feel like, and I've talked to my female comedian friends, even ones who are married, who've been with partners for a long time, it's like, they kind of unknowingly, maybe men feel like, oh, well, if she's doing it, then I can do it. Like if she's doing comedy.
They have, like, a competitive nature.
Yeah, have a competitive nature, or like, oh, well, I can be a comedian if you're a comedian. And that's like a thing that people have. And then even guys that I'll be like talking to or dating, or like, this guy's like, well, why don't you tell me your set? I can give you notes. And I'm like, okay, you are a fucking, like, no offense, you're a waiter. Like, why would I get what, you're not a comedian, you're not a creative. Like, but they think that they're entitled, like, they think that they can, like, provide feedback and do notes because of women's race.
It's almost like they diminish your strength and what you're doing. Yes. Your ability and what you're doing.
They diminish your strength, they diminish your ability. And, diminish your, like, because you're a woman and you're doing this, like, oh, I'm a man. Like, a lot of men.
Do you think they are doing this on purpose, or it's just part of their nature that they can't help themselves from?
Yeah. I don't think a lot of them are doing it on purpose, but I do think that, like, it happens enough where it's like, is it part of your nature, or is there something that tells you that, like, when a woman does things, it's automatically, like, not going to be as good or
less important.
Like, less important. And I mean, that's the conversation people are having with, like, Little Women or just things that women like in general. It's like not as good as things that men like, right? Like, we're supposed to, like, a book like Catcher in the Rye has, like, what are the great literature, like, classics, and we're supposed to be, like, identifying as, like, this is it, this is the experience of all America, or like what it means to be an adolescent. But people see Little Women, it's like, oh, that's a chick thing, and it's like, oh, they can't get life lessons or anything from things that are directed towards women, and
that's,
it's like
an important point that we are not getting an equal sense of what it's like for maturing and growing up and experiencing life. That kind of lack of knowledge and a lack of experience, I think, is bad for both sexes, for everybody, not just men and women, but everybody across the board.
And it's also like a race thing too, about people who, like, talk about, like, coming to age movies, and then it's like, oh, well, Moonlight's for black gay people, it's not for me, and it's like, well, no, like, black gay people for the longest time have had to find themselves in whatever mass media project has been out, and like, when the tables are turned, people are like, oh, well, this isn't for me, or like, oh, I can't listen to Beyonce's music because it's like for black people, it's that kind of argument. It's like, it's not really helpful and conducive, but it's like, it's this thing of a shift where people are always viewed as the center, and like, they're the thing, and then when then something's a little different, they're like, whoa, what
is
the
that
fuck?
Like, when people are in silos, I've heard that term used, that they feel like wherever they are is the most important aspect of their lives, and they're going to stay in that silo, they're going to just stay in that lane, they're not going to expand out of it. I really feel like and I may not always achieve it, I try to be open-minded about what's going on. When I think of my mother growing up and the way the world has changed, the technological advances, I just ponder how could she, you know, adjust with all of these things that we take for granted, you know, every single day. But it's a different time. It's a different time. And I hope, you know, that I can at least be open-minded enough to hear and want to know about what's going on.
Yeah.
So that I'm part of this century.
Yeah, no. And I will say, too, like,
look, folks, I'm so old. I grew up before pantyhose was invented. Okay.
That was a technological thing. Well, yeah, like, it's also, like, cool, too, to hear that, like, you're like, I'm not even interested in dating because, like, for so long, I want to speak to, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions, but, like, it's just, you know, women are taught, like, the worst thing you could be is like old and alone and not with a partner.
Well,
and, like,
well, there is something worse than being old and alone, being old and with someone that you can't stand.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. Like, that's the thing. It's like, or, you know, I was on vacation one time when I went to vacation to Hawaii and I was just by myself and I was on a beach and all this stuff. And I'm like, man, I've been taught my whole life that this is the worst thing. And of course, like, being on vacation by yourself is like, there are lonely moments, but I'm like, this is fucking awesome. Like, what the fuck? Like, what are we so afraid of? So it's like, but yeah, like, there.
My thing with, you know, my limited experience with having been married for so much of my life is that it's what I find is unfortunate is that when I am either initiate something or accept someone's advances, that I frequently feel like, oh gosh, I wish I hadn't done that. Wasn't, and not because it was a bad person, but because I wasn't satisfied.
I feel like that's just the base level.
Oh God.
Like, that's just
the base level. That's the base level.
That's just dating in New York. That's just dating in New York. You keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're expecting a different result. You're like, am I insane?
Oh, yeah. My God. No, oh, no, dating. Don't make me cry up in here. Yeah, she's going, hey, not only is the dick trash, it don't even satisfy you.
It is. Like, these guys are not even nice. And I'm like, you don't have good enough dick to be an asshole. You know what I mean?
That's what the dating apps have done.
Yeah, it's like
these trash dicks.
Yeah,
prosper.
These guys don't even ask your name.
Yeah.
Then you meet with them to have sex because you're horny, and then it's terrible. And I'm like, oh, this is sucks. Like, why am I even doing this? You suck at every fucking level. Yeah. I hate you. I hate it here.
Dating in New York definitely makes you really introspective and be like, okay, can I be by myself?
Yeah,
because exactly. I keep trying to. What am I looking for in these men or like in these partners that aren't that isn't fulfilling me? And yeah.
To just to shift. Oof. So I want to hear like about your most, whatever you feel like sharing, your most trash dick experience. And again, trash dick could be like actually like bad sex, or it could just be like the shittiest person, or like a whatever you want to share.
One that comes to mind is that I wanted to have an experience of someone who had a certain set of physical attributes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rhonda.
And when I was presented with the opportunity, there was not an orifice that I could fit that thing into.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you had a big dick hangover.
And I really felt like, well, that'll teach me. Think you thought you were a size queen, think again.
Oh man, you know,
pillows, angles.
No. A pillow angle was not gonna help any of this.
No lube, nothing.
No, oh please.
You can still hear the fear in your voice.
Oh, man. You have PTSD from that.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Oh, my God. And, you know, that's, like, that's also, too, like, that's another thing that's, like, so messed up is that everyone just thinks size. And even men, too, like, size. But it's just, like, it has, you know, not that it has nothing to do with size. But at the same time, like, a lot of my friends complain, like, the worst thing is a guy with a huge dick. Like, 9 times out of 10, they don't even use it right. They just, like, lay there and expect you to whatever.
Don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, and that's terrible. That sucks.
But you know, and I know this is about dicks being trash, but I feel like our society does not educate us for intimacy.
No, it doesn't. Mm-mm.
I resent that. I think it should be part of our growing up.
So why
wouldn't
you put
it
in the curriculum?
I would start it. Well, first thing, it could be in the curriculum, but I think it needs to start in the home.
Yeah.
You know, but when, you know, it's when the child is being potty trained or, you know, whenever anything about the body or intimacy comes up, that it's not shied away from, that it's dealt with. So we can
what
start.
What do you feel like people need to learn, I guess, is my thing. Like,
that intimacy and sex can be two different things.
Yeah.
That love and sex, it can be two different things. And we need to learn what satisfies us.
Yes.
Because you can be. I just saw some man who was on a television show, you know, talking about he was a football player, had 2 children, and then like years later comes out as gay.
Yeah.
And the wife is going, I think I knew that a couple of years before you told me. But so that we become familiar with ourselves and be allowed to, express.
Explore, express,
and be authentic.
Yeah.
I think we spend so much time hiding and so much time in whatever closet that, you know, that we're in that we lose our living time.
Yeah.
That's true.
So important. So wise.
I want to live.
Yeah. I want to live. Okay. Let's see. Okay. So just a few more questions. What are some red flags you've chosen to ignore in the past?
The guy shows up at my house around midnight with a bag of chips and 1 malt liquor.
No.
I think that's that's a red flag.
What should he show up to your house with?
Oh, my God. Well, first thing, he should call before.
Oh, he didn't even call him.
Not even 2 bags of chips.
2 bags of chips. Smirnoff for me, you know.
Smirnoff, not Smirnoff. Rhonda, I know you ain't giving it up for no Smirnoff ice. I'll get you that $7.99, Rhonda. You can love yourself a little bit. Okay.
No, but a red flag. I didn't know that a red flag was. I was talking to someone. And he says to me, "You know, I'm a very sensitive man." And it was only like several weeks later that I found out that he meant he was sensitive to his own needs.
Oh, that is so deep.
Yeah.
Wow. Damn. Damn. Okay.
Had no idea.
Speak on it. Yeah. Speak on it. No. So wait, he was only sensitive to his needs, but to everyone else's, it's like fucking.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive, and you know, I have to give it to him. He knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm there thinking, oh my gosh, we're gonna have something going on here. No, we were not.
Yeah, he was just sensitive, but that's true. Like, yeah, you could be sensitive, but do you care about other? But there are so many people like that are like, I'm so sensitive. And it's like, they're so
selfish.
Wrapped up in their own feelings.
Yeah.
They can't even see. It's like, it doesn't matter if you're aware that you're sensitive, if you're not trying to work.
I may be wrong, but I think that the whole idea of having almost the entire world at your fingertips to explore that way, whether you're ever going to meet them or not, I think that makes some people like that they don't have to really care.
Yeah.
They don't really have to invest in you personally, because there's like 27 other people who have come up.
We're
you know,
living
but
you
know
extremes. What? It's just extremes.
But the thing is, it's perceived options, because there's like 27 people that don't match with you. But really, it's only in reality, there's probably only like 2 or 3 other people that like will actually meet with you and would actually see you beyond a first date. There's so many levels, but these guys are like, oh, well, five girls matched with me yesterday. It was like, yeah, but two of them was a mistake. One of them is not going to ever see you in person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
But they think that they have all these options when they
perceived
really don't.
Options. Perceived options. Yeah, exactly. Not true. Yeah.
Okay. So without, if you, you know, you don't have to name venues or names or anything.
Oh my God.
But what's been your most trash experience in comedy? So you say how you got locked out, but I'm sure there's others.
I was asked to headline a show at a local comedy club by an independent producer who I wasn't familiar with. And he started putting on people in front of me. And after the fifth person, you know, I said, you know, what's happening here? And he says, oh, you might not go on. And I had already done all the this PR about
the fucking show. Yeah.
About the fucking show. and I had about I had a whole row of people who were there to see me.
Yeah.
And the show was coming to a close. Yeah. And I hadn't gone on yet. And when the MC went up to say that, the people who had come to see me started chanting that, put Rhonda on.
Yeah.
Put Rhonda on. Good. But the guy was not going to pay me. And I made a stink. I said, look, this is what you said you were going to do. I want my payment. I was so upset because I thought this was like one of the, I was trying to become acquainted with some of the new independent producers, and this was one of my first forays with it, and it was so unpleasant. And then I sort of felt great that the people were chanting for me. They said they were not going to leave until
until
I went on.
See you.
And then he says, okay, I'll give you half the money. And I just started yelling, no, I want all my money, like I was in a Broadway play going, I want my ham, I want my money.
Yeah,
you know?
Give me my fucking money.
And it really gave me a bad taste in my mouth for trying to deal with independent producers, because I came up, like I said, in the last century, when at the club there was like one person that you dealt with you know, for your spots and for what was going on, and it was basically trash. But then I did see that person was eventually evicted from the club from being an independent producer there. And then I heard other people talking about him, like even hitting on people, you know, trying to set up a date for you to do a gig, and all of a sudden he's like veering off into, you know, sexual areas. So I realized that my experience was, you know, it wasn't about me, it was about him as a trash promoter.
But exactly, like if you internalize that, it's like, what about, like, am I, you know, which is something that I would tend to do sometimes, is like, am I not good enough? You know, and it's
you're
just
always
like,
good enough, honey.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you.
Can I save that on my phone? I'm going to cut that and save it to my phone.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you got the nickname Passion.
Well, that is the name that I use when I'm directing. And I will be directing a short film soon. But
yes.
Rhonda Passion Handsome is the name that I like to use when I'm in that part of my creativity. Mm. And it came from, actually, when I had a conversation with my father, which, you know, it's not that many. So when I did talk with him, it was very impactful for me. Mm. And the man tried to make me believe that there wasn't anything between him and my mother. And it was a lie. I know that it
was. Oh, so he was like, I'm not your dad, I've never talked to
you.
Well,
no, he did not deny that, but he tried to deny the relationship. And I knew that
said, like, your mom was like a side.
Yeah, well, no, oh, it's not even that. She was in his life, but what I didn't like is he tried to make where they met be like something, represented to be something less than what it, you know, like it was not a good thing, like it wasn't a good place. And I knew that my mother didn't even frequent that type of place. But what bothered me was that he was trying to deny the feelings that he had, that there was actually a relationship. This was not a wham bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
And so I flipped out, had a nervous breakdown, and I said, I know that there was passion in your life because I'm the result of it.
Yeah.
And I started using that name for my my creative efforts as a director. Yeah. Passion. And also because I sometimes have an urgency or a sensibility about a quality in my voice that is, it's not anger, it's an intensity passion. That is actually passion for what I do or for how I'm expressing myself, what I'm expressing myself about.
Wow. You're so amazing. I'm obsessed. I stand. We have to stand.
Oh,
we have to stand. I know that you know what that means because you are on Tumblr.
Yes.
And YouTube, apparently. Apparently. You know what's up. Look, so this is a lightning round.
Okay. All right. So, I'm going to try not to say something that I have to apologize for in 2020.
No. All we're going to do is say a word and you're just going to say trash or no.
Oh, okay.
So let's go, right? Spanx.
Trash.
the emotion behind that. Porter potties.
Oh, trash.
Richard Gere.
I guess he's okay. I guess he's okay.
Riding the bus in New York City.
Oh, I love that.
Not trash. Okay.
Not trash.
Reality TV.
Well, the trash that I love. Can I go to that category?
Yes.
Turn a table over and I'm there.
Yay!
So you like Jersey.
Junior's cheesecake.
Oh, well, not trash. Not trash.
All right. Well, we're pretty 50-50 on what's trash and what's not. All right. So we're just going to end on a positive note. So, Rhonda, can you tell us one fond, happy memory that restored your faith in humanity?
Oh, something that restored my faith in humanity?
I know. Oh. This is the worst, question. Like, all these comedians are like, oh, the last guy was like, I got a hand job once. That was
On my way here, I had a change at Atlantic Avenue, and I saw this woman kneeling down, dealing with a stroller. There was a baby in the stroller and all of this stuff there, and I'm looking at her and I'm looking at her, and someone comes up the escalator, a woman comes up the escalator, she walks past, and then she turns around and comes back and starts helping the woman because the back wheels had come off stroller. And she goes over, she holds the stroller, she kicks the wheels back on with her feet, and I'm going, wow, I didn't even bother. I was just standing here looking, and I'm just glad I didn't take out my phone and start filming instead of helping her. And I thought that was such a kind gesture. It was a wonderful gesture.
You know what? I find it's always women doing that shit.
Yeah.
I'm always volunteering. It's always... it does restore your faith in humanity.
Yes, humanity. Well, I love it. I love it. And I love you for inviting me here.
Course.
This has been great.
I'm glad
making
you
me
can.
Go some places
that I haven't been expecting to. I know. I'm sorry. I thought that you lived in Crown Heights. So I was like, oh, she lives in Crown Heights. She's a local. She's probably here around the holidays. But now I know you came from the Bronx, and I'm so happy. I feel like Candy's super happy to have you.
I'm super obsessed with you. I love you.
I love you too.
You got another Twitter follower.
Oh, thank you.
And your blog is amazing.
One by one, I'm going to get there.
Yeah, and write a book, please.
Okay.
And and I can't wait for this to come out. I'm super excited. So happy. You're so wise. And thank you so much for doing this show.
I love you both, and thank you for having me.
Of course. Yay. Well, this has been another episode.
All dick is trash.
All dick is trash.
All dick is trash.
Thank you for listening to the All Dick is Trash podcast. The All Dick is Trash podcast is produced by Candy Harrell, and we are part of the More Banana Podcast Network. Our founder and managing producer is Kate Moldenhauer. If you would like to share an anonymous confession, email trashdickconfession@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at ADIT Podcast. And of course, you can always follow me, your host, Millie Tamaris, on Twitter at Millie Tamaris. Stay classy, y'all.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.